The following content is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, enjoy articles to help you improve your green thumb. And now, here's NCRS volunteer Cindy Fowler.
We'll start with the Raleigh News and Observer. This article is by Susan Banks. Fall is here, but you can still keep planting. Many people quit planting after spring, but seasoned gardeners know that late summer and early fall are great times to accent boring plantings or redo tired beds. You also might save some money, since some nurseries discount perennials, shrubs, and trees now. I thought it was a good time to talk about some of my favorite plants and to approach experienced gardeners and professionals about theirs. Most are perennials and shrubs and can be planted now. Some are annuals to put on your list for next season. Even though I hate the color orange, I absolutely love the daylily Primal Scream. The flower is huge, and its tangerine pink color pops in the flower bed. When I first saw this plant, it cost more than $75. These days, you can get it lots cheaper, as low as $15. As with most daylilies, they require minimal care. I do shear my daylilies back to about 8 inches from the ground after they finish blooming. They will flush up fresh growth that does not look so bedraggled at the end of the season. Panicle hydrangeas are workhorses in the garden, easily surviving the most horrific weather without a blink. My favorite cultivar is Limelight. And for those with small spaces, Little Lime works well. The bloom's creamy chartreuse color is lovely, especially when paired with scarlet roses. It also blooms later in the season, providing color after some garden stalwarts are finished. Richard Liberto, owner of Liberto Landscape Design, recommends Walker's Low, and Little Twitch Napata, two cultivars of catmint. He loves them because they are reliable, hardy, deer-proof, long-blooming, and an excellent pollinator, he says. Banana Cream Shasta Daisy is a compact cultivar growing 15 to 18 inches tall and 24 inches wide, semi-double, lemon yellow flowers that fade to creamy white bloom profusely from late spring through summer. It has dark green, semi-glossy foliage that is resilient to white flies, aphids, and beetles. And once established, it's drought-resistant. I consider Banana Cream to be the mainstay of the perennial border, cottage garden, rock gardens, pots, and most definitely the small garden, Liberto says. Penn State Extension and Post-Gazette columnist Sandy Feather says she has many favorite plants. Right this minute, Indian Pink is in full bloom in my yard. It blooms all summer. I have it in sun and shade, and it does very well. Susan Silverman, a past winner of the PG's Great Gardens Contest and a gifted master gardener, loves Forever Purple Coral Bells. The color is incredible. Sarah Mendak and her partner, Susie Lobdell, own Flower Pots, a landscape design company. She lists a few plants they use often in their projects. Forest Pansy Red Bud, blueberries in white flowers in the spring, edible berries in red fall color, and Creeping Jenny, so versatile, great for container gardening, ground cover, and excellent for water gardening. She also likes Lady's Mantle, a clumping perennial, and Leyland Cypress, a great, fast-growing privacy screen that is deer-resistant. Bernadette Kezar, another great gardens contest winner, chose Love Lies Bleeding, an annual that grows quickly from seed. Got hooked on this plant a few years ago, she says. I call this plant the fringe of my garden. Its long red tassels hang gracefully almost to the ground. The 5 to 6 foot height makes it an eye catcher. She also loves tree lilies, which have huge, fragrant blooms and top out at 4 to 6 feet. They should be planted in the fall. When you have a group of these, they perfume the entire garden. Calla lilies are a third favorite. I think of this flower as my tailor plant, simple, upright, and elegant. Bobby Smith, another contest winner, raves about quick-fire panicle hydrangea. This early bloomer has vibrant green foliage and long-lasting flowers that open pure white and turn pink. In the fall, the flowers become rosy pink and the leaves turn gold and burgundy. Stunning plant, she says, blooms on new growth, which is another nice feature for ease of pruning and size control. Donald Gilliland, an avid gardener who is a Post-Gazette digital news editor, chose peonies, which do much better when planted in the fall. I love the smell, carefree, and they remind me of my grandparents' house. Hollyhocks also remind him of his grandparents' house, but he says he never lived anywhere long enough to grow them. He's also partial to Grandpa Ott's morning glory. He also has favorite vegetables, Cherokee purple tomato, a great tasting but ugly-looking beefsteak, and Blauschocker's peas, which have purple pods, are easy to pick, and have a sweet taste when young. They can be used in soups. My mother put a good dent in my seed crop one year, eating the sweet young peas right in the garden, he says. She was worse than the deer. Dwayne Evans, owner-manager of Best Feeds in Ross, names Mountain Fire Pyrus japonica, a deer-resistant plant that grows well in sun or part shade. It has clusters of white, lily-of-the-valley-like flowers, but also colorful new growth in the summer. It eventually reaches 6 to 8 feet. And from HGTV's Gardens e-newsletter, Spring Bulbs to Plant This Fall, by Lynn Coulter. If you don't mind getting a little dirt on your hands when you plant bulbs this fall, you'll be rewarded with handfuls of flowers next spring. While your garden is cold and dreary, the bulbs will be forming roots and preparing to bloom when the weather warms up again. Popular varieties sell out fast, so buy or order your favorites ahead of time. Ranunculus. You could almost mistake a heavily petaled ranunculus for a rose. Plant the bulbs 2 inches deep in the fall. Plant the bulbs with the claw-shaped sides facing down. Narcissus refers to a genus that includes daffodils, paperwhites, and jonquils, but most of us think of the big, trumpet-shaped yellow flowers as daffodils and the small white ones as narcissus. When they're forced into bloom for the holidays, narcissus are called paperwhites. Golden Harvest is a vigorous, early-flowering bulb that dates back almost 100 years. Narcissi, which are typically hardy, zones 3 through 8, should be planted in autumn. Fall-planted Dutch iris are easy to grow and make lovely cut flowers. Get the bulbs in the ground before the first hard freeze and give them a site with full sun to partial shade. They should be planted about 4 to 6 inches deep and 3 inches apart. Let the leaves remain on the plants until they die back naturally, and the bulbs should flower again the following year. There are many different types of tulips, including Darwin hybrids, Fosterianas, doubles, parrots, and more. Tulip Akebono is a Japanese tulip that blooms in mid to late spring. Plant this double beauty in the fall, in part sun to part shade. Even though alliums are related to onions and garlic, you probably won't smell anything unless you crush the plant's leaves. In the fall, give the bulbs a spot with full sun and plant them 6 inches deep and 12 to 14 inches apart with the pointed ends facing up. Their long, slender stems and globe-shaped flowers make alliums great for a cutting garden. Don't worry if their foliage turns yellow by midsummer. It's just going dormant until the bulbs are ready to bloom again. If you are having trouble finding true blue flowers for your garden, look for muscari or grape hyacinths. These little bulbs, available in white and various shades of blue and purple, like full sun and soil that drains easily. They mix beautifully with other spring blooming flowers, such as daffodils and tulips. Plant them in the fall, 2 to 3 inches deep, spacing them every 3 to 4 inches. Hyacinths fill the spring garden with an intoxicating perfume. Start your bulbs in fall, planting them 7 to 8 inches deep in soil mixed with lots of good organic matter. The planting site should drain easily, so the bulbs won't rot in soggy soil or standing water. Mulch if the winters are cold, or if the ground might freeze in spring. And don't remove the foliage when the flowers fade. Let it grow until it dies naturally so it can store energy for the next season's flowers. Cheerful daffodils are classic spring flowers. For a natural look, toss them around in your yard or landscape and plant them wherever they land. Start with big, healthy bulbs and plant them 6 inches deep about 2 to 4 weeks before your ground freezes. They need sun to part sun. Sunshine Boys is a mix of early blooming daffodils. Perky snowdrops are early bloomers, sometimes even emerging from a crust of snow. Plant the small bulbs 2 to 3 inches deep and 3 inches apart in a spot that gets sun to light shade. As time goes by, they'll multiply by forming offsets, baby bulbs, that you can dig up, separate, and replant. Don't let your snow bulbs dry out before you get them in the ground. For best results, plant tulip bulbs, pointed ends up, 6 to 8 weeks before the first hard frost. Larger bulbs should be planted deeper, 8 to 10 inches deep, than the smaller ones, 5 to 6 inches deep. Because tulips do need a certain amount of cold weather to flower, they may not come back after the first year or two. Ask your local county's Extension Service agent if you should buy pre-chilled tulip bulbs, or chill them yourself in your refrigerator before you plant. Plant crocus bulbs just underneath your grass in the fall for pops of early spring color. Hocus crocus is a mix of purple, white, and purple striped varieties. These dainty flowers, which are hardy in zones 3 to 8, like a sunny garden spot, and typically multiply as time goes by. Wait 6 to 8 weeks before you mow over their foliage so you'll have repeat blooms next year. The small bulbs usually flower before the grass needs mowing anyway, and the thin, narrow leaves blend in with your lawn. And from Dave's garden website, Curly Dock, Rumex Crispus, History and Lore by Melody Rose. Many weeds have an interesting history, and it's fun to explore their legends and uses. Curly Dock. Rumex Crispus is a common roadside and barnyard weed. It is a relative of the familiar buckwheat, and in days past was considered useful. Today, This native of southern Europe and Africa is just another unwanted plant to be banished from gardens and pastures. It is non-native to the rest of the world. However, in many areas, it isn't present in enough numbers to be considered a noxious pest. This perennial is toxic to livestock and poultry, so should be eradicated from their grazing areas. The good thing is it has no ill effects on humans, so we can make good use of it. Curly dock, yellow dock, or sour dock, as it is sometimes called, is partial to disturbed ground in sunny areas. That generally means that you'll find it growing at the edges of agricultural fields and livestock enclosures. I also see quite a bit of it growing along the unmowed roadsides. It can spring up just about anywhere, as the seeds can remain viable for 50 to 80 years, and each plant can produce up to 60,000 of them. Early peoples ground the seeds into a type of flour. It is a relative of buckwheat, after all. And they also roasted them to prepare a coffee-like drink. Young leaves were used as a spring pot herb, and they are more nutritious than either spinach or carrots, high in beta-carotene, vitamin C, and zinc. This was definitely a nutrition-packed plant for the malnourished winter-weary. There are several modern chefs who advocate shredding the young leaves and using them in stir-fry, too. They have a pleasant sour taste, and while the older leaves can be tough and stringy, the young ones can be eaten, ribs and all. While livestock and domestic poultry should not consume it, curly dock seeds are a favorite of a number of game birds, and it is also a host plant for the copper family of butterflies. The dried seeds produce a lovely, creamy yellow dye when alum is used as a mordant. The roots produce a darker olive shade. Unfortunately, it is also a host and carrier of a number of agricultural diseases, so it is a double-edged sword. It gives on one hand, but takes with another. Some interesting legends and folklore surround this common weed. One of the weirdest was the belief that it could draw love. The lovelorn were instructed to dig a root of the curly dock, dress it in a similar manner as the one they had affection for, and carry this doll for a month. Now comes the weird part. After carrying this doll for a month, they were instructed to chop up the root and boil it in water. When this potion cooled, the lovelorn was to wash their entire body in it. This would draw the object of their desire to them forever. The tea from the boiled roots was also rubbed on the doorknobs of businesses to draw customers, and people washed their coins in it to draw more money into their pocketbooks. It is amazing what interesting tidbits surround these forgotten plants. Some are based in fact, and others are pure fantasy. But as a lover of trivia, I find the search fascinating. And from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, Best Herbs for Indoor Growing by Conrad Richter. In recent years, many new varieties of herbs have been introduced, some of which do better indoors than the traditional varieties. Here are herbs notable for their consistent, compact growth habit and strong flavor. Grulau chives, strong flavor and thick, dark green leaves. Developed for forcing, 8 to 12 inches tall. Fernleaf dill, a dwarf form of dill, only 18 inches tall, ideal for dill weed indoors. Standard varieties grow too tall and bolt too soon. Easy from seeds. English mint, perhaps the best behaved spearmint variety, not as invasive as others, and the leaves are broader and deeper green. Excellent for cooking and tea. Easy to propagate from cuttings. Spicy globe, basil, dense, compact form of basil, 8 to 10 inches tall, good flavor, grow from seed. Greek oregano, the true oregano for Mediterranean cooking with excellent flavor and white flowers. Watch out for the imposter with pink flowers and no flavor. Greek oregano grows well in pots, reaching 8 to 12 inches, grows easily from seed. Broadleaf thyme, also known as Spanish thyme and Cuban oregano. This plant has broad, fleshy leaves, unlike those of ordinary thyme. Wonderful, spicy thyme oregano flavor and useful in many of the same recipes of ordinary thyme. Never goes dormant. Grows from cuttings only and reaches 10 to 12 inches tall. Vietnamese coriander. Not true coriander, but a good substitute. Regrows after cutting, unlike true coriander, which must be reseeded after harvest. Grows 4 to 8 inches tall. Propagate from cuttings. Blue boy rosemary. More compact and diminutive than regular rosemary, reaching only 24 inches. Flowers freely and has excellent flavor. Propagated by cuttings only. Dwarf garden sage. Smaller leaves and more compact habit than regular sage. Growing only 10 inches high. Same sage flavor. Propagated by cuttings only. Seeds are unavailable. Creeping savory. Flavor identical to that of winter savory, but easier and faster to grow indoors. Reaches only 2 to 4 inches in height, but fills the pot with a dense mat of foliage. Difficult to find seeds, but grows readily from cuttings. For trees and shrubs, stake new trees high on the trunk. Tie them loosely as possible to encourage wind movement while still protecting them from damage. And keep planting woody ornamentals. Control scale insects on the backs of the leaves of broad-leaved evergreens by spraying with dormant oil. Take a garden inventory and remove plants that have not performed well. For your annuals, protect tender plants from frost in colder areas to extend blooming. Remove all spent and frost-damaged plants and prepare the soil for winter and spring planting. Add all weeds and disease-free plant material to the compost pile. Take cuttings from or move indoors any plants to be saved or overwintered. For perennials and bulbs, sow seeds for spring planting. Finish planting your spring flowering bulbs. Clean up after any frost in colder areas, adding disease-free plant materials to the compost pile. Fill in with hardy annuals for winter display and watch for signs of pests and diseases. For your roses, take cuttings for propagation. Transplant rooted cuttings from last year. Plant pansies and violas in the rose beds for winter color. Plant early spring flowering bulbs in the rose beds. For vegetables and herbs, harvest new potatoes by carefully digging near the surface. Save the deeper tubers for mature harvest in December. Watch for cabbage loopers. Add leaves, grass clippings, and manure to the compost pile and turn it every 2 weeks. Add more manure and water if the pile won't heat up. Foliar feed fall vegetables and herbs with a hose-end fertilizer sprayer. For tomatoes, be prepared to protect plants from early frost. Harvest fruit as soon as it turns pink to limit insect and bird damage. Continue adding to the compost pile and turn it every 2 weeks. Add more manure and water if it won't heat up. Watch for leaf-footed stink bugs. Plant empty areas with a cover crop of rye or oats to discourage nematodes. And for lawns, apply fertilizer to Bermuda grass if not done already. Mow only as needed. Water if conditions are dry, particularly if the lawn was overseeded with perennial rye grass. Rake up leaves and other debris as needed. For your patio and container plants, monitor the plants daily for water needs and pest control. Pinch back and deadhead as needed. Continue planting cool season annuals and replacing trees and shrubs as needed. And from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, fall colors are funny. They're so bright and intense and beautiful. It's like nature is trying to fill you up with color, to saturate you, so you can stockpile it before winter turns everything muted and dreary. Sibon's Vivian said that. Now, identifying wild plants, sumac, glorious fall color by Melody Rose. Many cultivated plants can trace their roots to common roadside wildflowers and shrubs. Often, gardeners often assume that the wild or native form is simply an escapee from someone's garden. These wildlings are frequently overlooked and deserve more attention than they get. They're tough, hard to kill, and come with the added benefit of being attractive to bees, butterflies, and wildlife. One of the first plants to wrap itself in an autumn cloak is sumac. These small, shrubby, tree-like plants are often considered weeds and undesirable, but they can offer some of the most wonderful fall color to ever grace a garden. They are great for stabilizing slopes and make a good informal hedge if planted in groups. When the plants are in bloom, hundreds of insects, from butterflies and bees to pollen-eating beetles, converge upon the pretty, upright blooms to partake in their goodness. Sumac of any species is an excellent choice for a wildlife garden. Songbirds love the berries and are often seen picking through the clusters in the dead of winter. Sumac is often found in shaggy fence rows and at the edges of hardwood forests, since the seeds are often spread by birds. The slender trunks frequently grow in grotesque shapes and unusual forms, which tends to frustrate gardeners who prefer military precision. But those of us who embrace the unusual are quite pleased with their quirky forms. The compound leaves often grow between 12 inches and 12 feet and 18 inches and droop from the stems in an attractive manner. Generally unnoticed through most of the season, sumac does not stand out from the crowd until autumn arrives. Seemingly overnight, the green leaves change to a startling crimson that seems to glow with an inner light. Those of us lucky enough to have it growing wild find it a lovely bright spot in a rapidly changing landscape.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.